Welcome to the Gorgons and Gods podcast with all the fun facts about myths from across the world. As always, I'm your host, Eric, and now it's time to dive into the land of the gods. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy Hanukkah, happy Yule, happy Saturnalia, happy holidays. I hope you're having a wonderful holiday season. Throughout this first season of the podcast, we'll be discussing everything about Greek myth. And in today's bonus episode, we'll be talking about the pagan origins for Christmas and several legends and stories associated with the Christmas holiday. So grab some hot chocolate and a cookie and enjoy today's episode. Now, there were many celebrations held in December across many cultures and in many different lands, all before the birth of Christ. The 25th of December is more than likely not the actual day of Jesus' birthday. Majority of historians believe that he was not even born in December or in winter months at all. However, the 17th to the 24th of December was the date of the Roman celebration of Saturnalia. Many historians believe that Saturnalia was the origin for Christmas. Saturnalia was originally a Greek celebration of the harvest, in which farmers would collect all their final harvests and then go to the temple of Kronos, aka Saturn, slaughter cows and sacrifice to Saturn to pray for a better harvest and a better year and for the next year to come quickly and get them through the winter months. The ceremony was meant to represent a rebirth and renewal, a start to a new year and a better time and a better harvest. After Greece was conquered by the Romans, the tradition of Saturnalia was carried over to Rome. However, the Romans set an exact date for Saturnalia as the festival of the 17th of December. However, Saturnalia quickly outgrew this date, and soon Saturnalia became a massive party that stretched over a full week from the 17th of December to the 24th of December, ended early the 25th of December morning. Saturnalia symbolized the start of a new year, but also represented a great reversal within culture and people. During Saturnalia, all slaves could act as freemen for the week, and royal parties happened with commoners, and commoners partied with royals, so most of the social bounds and restrictions were taken away. There was cross-dressing and mud-fighting in the streets, and everyone did as they wished. Essentially, for 7 days, Rome had no laws, no restrictions, no cultural guidelines. Everyone did as they pleased. There was drinking booze fests all around. As soon as Saturnalia ended on the 25th of December, a small sect of elite men within Roman culture would celebrate the birth of their god, Mithra, the sun god. Now, this was only a small sect of a Roman group, a very high elite group. Typically, Apollo or Hyperion was worshipped as the god of the sun. Saturnalia is a celebration dating back all the way to the 300s BC, so long before the date of Christ's birth. However, you can already see why the 25th of December would later become Christmas. It was in the middle of the Saturn holiday, which represented rebirth, renewal, and a start of a new age, and the 25th of December was already celebrated as the birth of one god, so why not make it the birth of another? It was an easy method for the church to essentially take a different holiday and subvert it to use for their own. And in the 4th century, the church officially declared the 25th of December as Christ's birthday. Now, we will leave the Greeks and Romans behind and move north to discuss another ancient pagan holiday which has shaped our modern Christmas celebration. In the north, primarily in Scandinavia, Vikings celebrated Yule. Yule was a celebration and feast in honor of Odin, king of the Aesir gods. During Yule, people would erect evergreen trees in their homes as a reminder of summer and sunshine. The evergreen was also said to be magical because it kept its leaves all year. Vikings would then hang apples on the tree and light candles all around their house. During Yule, men and women would drink large amounts of spice cider and dance around great bonfires. Bonfire was said to drive away the darkness and cold in winter. And in the morning of Yule, people would give presents of new clothes to each other, scarves and coats and hats. Yule took place on December 21st. I'm sure these Yule traditions are already sounding remarkably similar to our modern celebration of Christmas. But how did the Roman tradition of Saturnalia and the Scandinavian tradition of Yule end up merging together to form our modern Christmas? Why, through brutal conquest and subjugation, of course. As the Roman Empire expanded, Saturnalia also expanded. Soon, people all across Europe were celebrating Saturnalia. However, around 320 AD, Christianity became the official national religion of the Roman Empire. But the Roman government had a problem. The people weren't willing to abandon their parties and traditions so easily. The people quite enjoyed their drunken, booze-fueled festivals. So, the Roman government allowed them to continue celebrating Saturnalia, but under a new name. They changed the name to Christmas, and replaced all the iconography of Saturn and Cronus, and replaced it with Jesus and the Mother Mary. Then, the Roman government began to conquer northern regions, and their powers continued to expand northward. Eventually, the traditions of Yule and Saturnalia came into contact, and they began to cross-culturally express each other. Since the two holidays took place so near to each other, often elements of Yule were incorporated into Saturnalia, and Saturnalia into Yule. Eventually, both these holidays combined to form Christmas, what is now celebrated today. The evergreen became the Christmas tree, and many Roman traditions turned into Christmas traditions. For example, the mistletoe, a plant in Roman culture which represented fertility, was hung above doorways and above beds to help with conception. However, nowadays, it is celebrated as a symbol of love. Another Roman feature, which has continued into today, is the symbol of the wreath. The wreath was often depicted as a symbol of victory or power, and is now, in modern traditions, a symbol of Christmas. Now, I want to discuss the origins of Santa Claus. Now, Santa Claus wasn't a part of the early Christmas celebrations in Rome, and he wasn't a part of Yule. The actual St. Nicholas was a man who lived from 200s AD until the mid-300s AD. St. Nicholas was a Greek bishop who was well-respected at the time of his life and attended the First Council of Nicaea. During his life, St. Nicholas was said to secretly leave gold pieces in stockings and shoes of children. However, the reason for these presents is much darker than it might appear. Many historians believe that St. Nicholas gave these children money as a present so that they wouldn't have to become prostitutes. After his death, St. Nicholas was revered and respected throughout the church and was named a saint. Therefore, he was given a holiday called St. Nicholas Day on December 5th or possibly the 6th. On St. Nicholas Day, children would find coins and presents hidden in their stockings or shoes. As cultures changed and shifted, his present giving idea came to be associated with Christmas as well. Since Yule already involved the giving of gifts, many people and cultures took up St. Nicholas Day as a sort of pseudo-Christmas, and eventually the two ideas began to blend together into one day. The first culture that began to celebrate St. Nicholas as a fat, jolly old man to come down the chimney was the Dutch. In about the 1200s, they had Sinterklaas, who came down the chimney and gave children presents and gold, and if you were bad, he would give you coal. Thus, Santa Claus was born, but he wasn't fully adopted by the majority of culture until the 1600s. Okay, now we've seen how Christmas started off as Saturnalia and then was transformed into Christmas by the Roman government. We've seen how Yule traditions began to spread into Christmas, and we also saw how St. Nicholas became jolly old Santa Claus coming down the chimney with presents. Now, we're going to shift our focus and talk about some of the scary myths associated with Christmas. The first such myth was originally a Yule myth, but was then carried forwards into the new Christmas tradition. The story of Grilla. Grilla was said to be a giant. She was a hag with long white hair and crooked talons and a crooked nose. During Yule time, Grilla would wander Scandinavian towns at night, looking for children. Any bad children she found, she would grab them, stuff them into her sack, and carry them away. She would take them back to her house, which lay deep in the forest, and there she would boil them and turn them into children's soup. Grilla also had a cat who lived with her, but this was no ordinary cat. Her cat was as large as a house and had razor-sharp claws and razor-sharp whiskers that should shred through wood. When Grilla went hunting, so did her cat, and the cat came to be known as the Yule Cat. On Yule, people exchanged new winter clothes, but anyone who didn't get new clothes would be eaten by the Yule Cat. In later myths, this was changed to the person's dinner would be eaten by the Yule Cat. Grilla also had 13 sons, who were known as the Yule Lads. The Yule Lads were described as short guys with sharp ears. This is probably where the stories of elves and goblins came from. It was said that on the 12th of December, the first of the Yule Lads would arrive in a Scandinavian town and begin mischief. Each successive day, a new member of the Yule Lads would arrive until the 24th of December, at which all 13 would have arrived. These little monsters would go around town messing with people. They would steal candlesticks and eat sausages and knock over your Christmas tree or any other crazy mischief. However, if you were good, they would often leave a gold coin in your shoe. many of these Yule myths have been carried forward into Christmas tradition all across Scandinavia, Iceland, and Germany. The next Christmas myth I would like to talk about is that of Krampus. Krampus is a German myth, however the story of Krampus reaches far past Germany, and has been seen in Switzerland, Austria, and the Czech Republic. Krampus's true origins are hard to pin down, as much the text around him has been either lost or forgotten or assimilated into the early church. The myth of Krampus has many similarities to that of Grilla. Here we have a chicken and the egg situation. Krampus or Grilla come first? I'm not sure, so I'm just going to tell both myths. Krampus was a demon. The word Krampen means claw or monster. Krampus was also sometimes called the shadow of Saint Nicholas. Nicholas gave presents to the good little boys and girls, while Krampus would punish the bad children. Krampus is depicted as a man covered in fur with a goat's head. He had long, sharp claws and wears an old brown robe. Krampus often is depicted as being covered in chains and carrying a large sack. The chains were meant to represent how the church had bound and leashed a demon to their will. During ancient days, people would celebrate Krampus Night. Krampus Night took place just before St. Nicholas Day on December 25th. Krampus Night was celebrated by dressing up in fur and wearing masks. Then they would go around the town and make a giant nuisance. People in these costumes would party and drink and fight and make a giant uproar and ruckus. The early church tried to stamp out these Krampus Night traditions, seeing it as unholy and pagan. But contrary to what the church tried to do, that actually just made these grow. Anyone who disliked the church's rule started joining in these Krampus Nights, making them bigger and bigger. Eventually, the church decided they should allow these Krampus Nights and just essentially restrict them carefully. So Krampus Night continued. Eventually, after St. Nicholas Day became assimilated into part of Christmas, Krampus was also assimilated into Christmas, and Krampus became seen as St. Nicholas's assistant, essentially. Krampus was the demon that worked with St. Nicholas. He would punish the bad children, while St. Nicholas would gift the good children with good cheer. On Christmas, all the good children would get their presents, and Krampus would punish the bad children. These punishments ranged from a lump of coal, to being beaten with reeds, to being drowned in the lake, to being eaten alive by Krampus. And sometimes, Krampus would drag bad children off to hell inside his sack. So the myth of Krampus is much darker than the majority of the myths we still have. Krampus Night is still often celebrated within Germany and German culture, and celebrated in many other parts of the world. Krampus is likely inspired by other myths within German culture, which I will discuss in later episodes. Our final myth of today is that of the Tomte. Now, this myth is especially important to me, as this is the only one of the myths I've discussed today which I grew up believing in. The Tomte, or as they are sometimes called, the Nisse, is a Scandinavian myth. The Tomte look like old men with long white beards and long red hats. The Tomte range in height from as small as an ant to about 3 feet tall. They are often depicted as wearing farmer's clothes, possibly because some people believed the Tomte were the spirits of dead farmers. The Tomte were helpful and kind beings who would protect and help people. They would do chores and guard one's house, but they were almost never seen, and in some myths they were even said to be able to turn invisible, so they were a silent guardian that no one would ever notice. The family could win a Tomte's good blessing by leaving out food and hot cider for the Tomte. The oldest myths of the Tomte say that it liked cider and porridge the best for dinner, but in the 12th century this changed to being cookies. However, the family should take great care not to anger their Tomte guardian, because when a Tomte is angered, it will play tricks on the household. It will break items, it will steal things, it will move things around, it will kill your cattle, and, in the most extreme cases, a Tomte may even bite you. A Tomte's bite is said to be poisonous, and you will need magic to be healed. It's not hard to see how these myths of short men with long white beards and long red hats, who eats cookies and helps out around a farm, would begin to seep into Christian tradition, especially since the Tomte were said to be most active during December, and most popular during December. Soon, the idea of the Tomte became synonymous with Santa, and the Tomte are often believed to have been part of the inspiration for where the elves came from. Now, today's episode covered a lot of different topics, so let's do a quick recap. Christmas as a holiday was originally formed by combining the Roman pagan holidays of Saturnalia and the Scandinavian holiday tradition of Yule. Then St. Nicholas Day and Krampus Night were mixed in with Christmas festivals, all combining into one holiday, which is now modern Christmas. There are many other myths and legends surrounding Christmas, which I just didn't have time for this episode, but perhaps next year or later on in this Christmas season, I'll make more episodes talking about the other myths of creatures and monsters within Christmas mythology. Thank you for once again joining me in this week's episode of the Gorgons and Gods podcast. I hope you have had a wonderful December. As always, I have been your host, Eric, here with everything you need to know about mythology from across the world. Please consider following and sharing with a friend. If you enjoyed what you learned here today, then stick around, because in the next week's episode, we will discuss the drunken king of parties, Dionysus.